From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, one of the poorest counties in the country says it can't afford health insurance anymore and tells its employees to sign up for the Affordable Care Act. Is Texas turning blue? New statistics say yes, but not right away. This is Texas Matters. From Texas Public Radio, I'm David Martin Davies. Brooks County is in South Texas near the coast, not exactly on the border, but near enough to be heavily impacted by the cost of illegal immigration. This week, the county said it can't afford health insurance for its employees, and at the end of the month, that benefit will go away. The county recommends the employees sign up for the Affordable Care Act. That sign-up deadline is also at the end of the month. Raul Ramirez is the Brooks County judge.
Well, number one, basically, we have a self-funded plan, and we had last month $159,000 worth of claims, and leaving us a balance of $106,000, and that is not enough to fund the plan. So our committee had to make a tough decision, and they met on the 6th of March and had a recommendation, and I can read it to you. Just it says, the Brooks County Insurance Committee met on March 6, 2014 to review the operations of the Brooks County Health Plan. Due to insufficient funding, the committee recommends the health plan be terminated effective April 1, 2014, as there are no available funds to pay the expense of the health plan. The committee further recommends that the stop-loss insurance be retained through May 31, 2014 to protect the county from unlimited claim liability during the runoff claim period. The runoff claims will be processed as the outline of the contractual agreement, and on and on. And so that we had an agenda item on yesterday that read basically discussion approval on a recommendation of the Brooks County Health Plan to be terminated effective April 1st and to retain the stop loss. And so the Commissioner's Court took the initiative and had to make a tough decision. But, you know, when there's no money, because last budget, when we made all the cuts, 10% to elected officials, 3% to the employees, we had done away with their dependent coverage and children coverage. We only were covering the employees. And we knew that it was a gamble to try to, but it looked like, you know, we were going to be able to make it to the end of the budget year. But we had 100, like I said, when you have $159,000 worth of claims in 1 month, the history will show you that it's not going to work.
So what are you telling your people to do?
We basically had, we gave them an outline that said, effective March 31st at 12 p.m. midnight, Brooks County will no longer offer health insurance coverage to their employees and to their dependents. And then it says insurance personnel will be available at the library March the 13th and Friday the 14th, offering assistance to anyone wishing to enroll in Obamacare exchange or in a private insurance policy. And so that's what we have done, and we're allowing the employees to go and meet with these representatives at the library and try to come up. A lot of our employees, their spouses have insurance where they are employed, and they will be taking the spouses on. A lot of them will be uninsured.
You know. But they do have the option of signing up with the Affordable Care Act.
Yes, sir. Yes. We've afforded that opportunity to them today and tomorrow to do that. And we brought personnel to help them and assist them.
And how much of a deal is that?
We used to cover the employees. We used to cover the dependents for $140 a month. And but as we've lost oil and gas revenues, you know, we had to make tough budget cuts. And we started this last year making massive cuts, and we're still not out of the woods yet. It looks like this year, you know, we'll have to buy if the projections to lose the $100 million that is projected to lose this year, we will have to make even more cuts. But right now we're hoping that those figures are wrong and that there'll be some positive numbers out of it. But, you know, the history just doesn't show it.
But you're also having to deal with the illegal immigration issue.
Yes, sir. That's another problem that we've had. But, you know, that'll be, you know, thank God that we've only had 12 year-to-date. But, you know, we're not in July and August yet. So that's something that's in the horizon. And hopefully we won't have as many, but, you know,
These are the illegal crossers coming through Brooks County, trying to avoid the checkpoint in Falfurrias.
Exactly.
And it falls upon the county, the sheriff's department, to try to rescue people who are dying out in the desert.
Well, like I said, the high we had is 129 in 1 year.
Deaths.
And that puts a terrific impact on the county coffers. Funerals, DNA, the whole nine yards, autopsies, you know, and with no federal assistance, no help from the federal government, you know, that puts a burden on a very impoverished county. So it's the perfect storm. You know, we get it from every which direction.
Can the federal government step in and provide some assistance?
Well, we've been asking, but it's kind of fallen on deaf ears. But hopefully, you know, a situation that down the line, you know, we only budgeted $25,000 for autopsies. We've already hit that threshold. This particular month's meeting yesterday, we had to allocate $3,000 and transfer in to defray that cost. And it was $3,370, and it was a line item transfer from the burial expense to the autopsy. And so if we get any more bodies, we're going to have a major situation, because the Commissioner's Court and my auditor have agreed when we did this last year that we're going to hold the line and not run any items in the red. So at that point, we might get somebody's attention.
Are you going to lose your insurance?
Yes, sir. And you're looking at a 60-year-old man that had a quadruple bypass in October. And by all, I'm deemed uninsured.
So what are you going to do?
I am definitely going to go talk to the I have the application before me to try it again, but I assure you I'm not going to qualify, so I will join the ranks of the uninsured.
Raul Ramirez is the county judge for Brooks County, one of the poorest counties in the country. This week, the county announced it can no longer afford health insurance for its employees and recommends that they sign up for the Affordable Care Act. March 31st is the deadline to sign up for the Affordable Care Act, and the push is on by supporters of the ACA to get folks on board. The latest total for enrollees is 4.2 million. The Obama administration had set its sights on 6 million. This weekend, around the state and across the nation, there are hundreds of events looking to enroll the uninsured. Texas Congressman Lloyd Doggett, a Democrat that represents the San Antonio-Austin corridor, is attending such an event on Saturday in San Antonio.
In Texas, 9 out of 10 people, actually a little more than 9 out of 10 people who are eligible for insurance on the new insurance exchanges have not enrolled. This is a great opportunity for our area families who've not had insurance, who've not had regular access to a family doctor, to get that access. In many cases, people who enroll on the exchange get substantial tax credits available immediately to keep the premiums affordable.
So are these types of events happening around the state?
There are, and we've had a number in the San Antonio area. But we're now down really to just a little over 2 weeks before the enrollment period ends. So someone who wants to get insurance coverage for this year really needs to do it immediately. And as I say, so many people have not yet taken advantage of this opportunity. In addition to the Affordable Care Act, which is my focus, getting more people insurance and access to a family doctor, at our enrollment fair on Saturday, we are involving a number of other local groups, veterans, Metro Health and the Food Bank, just a range of services to help people. But the main focus is how do we take advantage of the law that's there and get the benefits that law provided to as many families as possible. We still have a tremendous number of uninsured families in the San Antonio area. And we all know that we're just an auto accident or a bad diagnosis away from really needing care and needing the insurance to cover that care so that a family is not bankrupted like so many have been.
Now, there's been some new modifications announced to the individual mandate, particularly for people who may have lost their insurance.
Well, there have been a number of changes over time as the Affordable Care Act has been implemented. But as recently as yesterday in a hearing in Washington, the secretary responsible for this program said that the requirement that individuals purchase insurance still is in place. So this is a mandate for families that don't otherwise have insurance to purchase affordable insurance with the help of these tax credits and to do so by the end of the month.
President Obama is certainly doing his best to try to drive people to the healthcare.gov website. Went on Funny or Die, Between Two Ferns. Funny sketch there. Some people said it wasn't presidential. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think that we're often called on in public office to do a wide range of activities to try to reach people. And I think that is unusual for the president to be on that particular program. But really, if that helps us get to some young people who've not focused on this or think they're invincible and will never need health coverage, I'd say more power to it. Many of the folks that we most want to get into this program are younger people who've never had insurance before. Fortunately, a benefit of the Affordable Care Act is that you can stay on your parents' policy up to age 26. We have a number of folks that are over 26 attending school, and they need that insurance coverage also. I hope the president was able to get it to the attention of a few, even though it was a little silly.
Now, there was an election recently in Florida, the 13th Congressional District. Obamacare, if the Affordable Care Act, was a central issue in that election. Didn't go well for the Democrats. The Republicans won that race. Some people are saying that this shows a political weakness still for the Affordable Care Act and may be a sign of things to come in the midterms.
Well, that was a Republican district in St. Petersburg, Florida, that's been represented about three decades by a Republican. And has a Republican profile. I wish we'd won. I was hoping we would, but I don't think on that one Republican district one can draw a conclusion about this act. I think much more needs to be done. I have been pressing the administration since last August to do a better job in Texas, and I continued to do that this week in the hearing. We need to learn from some of the mistakes that have been made in the initial implementation and ensure when we have another opportunity to continue enrollment in the fall that we get that job done. My immediate focus here in the next 2 weeks throughout Central Texas is just to keep reaching out to that 9 out of 10 families who've not yet participated to let them know about the benefits. And I always tell people, you know, get above the political noise in Washington. Go to something like the American Cancer Association website or the diabetes website, and see what the benefits are to you and your family of this, and listen to what the experts have to say, and see if it works for your family, and if it does, sign up at an affordable price.
Lloyd Doggett is a Democratic congressman from San Antonio. He is encouraging the uninsured to sign up for the Affordable Care Act before the deadline at the end of the month. There's more information on the ACA's website, healthcare.gov. A big target for enrollees with the Affordable Care Act in Texas is Latinos. They are the most likely population not to be insured. And if the ACA is a success, it could be seen as one more reason why the Republican Party would have a tough time attracting Latino voters. And as Texas is undergoing a demographic shift to a voting age minority-majority population, the state could quickly turn from deep red to baby blue. Dante Cheney wrote about that transformation recently in the Wall Street Journal. He is the director of the American Communities Project at American University and a columnist for the Wall Street Journal.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people have talked about the long-term kind of demographic trend in Texas, which is the growing Hispanic population, and the effect most people assume that's going to have on the vote there. The vote, obviously, is statewide is Republican. So there's a question of at some point, because of the large, the Democratic voting tendency of Hispanics, if that's going to flip in the state. And it hasn't happened. And a lot of people are wondering why it really hasn't happened. And the numbers don't really appear to show that it's going to happen if you just look at vote totals. Mitt Romney won the state by about 16 percentage points in 2012. That's a pretty big win. So why, with this big and growing Hispanic population, has Texas not – it looks like a state in transition politically, but it doesn't seem like it is. And what I wrote about last week for the Journal, one of the big things to keep in mind is a large part of the Hispanic population in Texas is under the age of 18. There's a huge bubble under the age of 18 that will age into voting age soon. And when that does, then you really might start to see Texas move fairly quickly from being a red state to being a purple state or a blue state.
You also note that in Texas has this very big white voting bloc, which has been propping up the GOP.
Yeah, that's true. The one thing also to keep in mind is there's a couple things that go into what Texas is. There's this large growing Hispanic population, but the white population, the non-Hispanic white population, which you can identify through census data and through polling measures, is not just Republicans, it's very Republican. So overall, nationally, U.S. non-Hispanic whites vote Republican about 48% of the time. In Texas, 61% of them recognize themselves or self-identify as Republicans. That's a big difference, and that means that any change that's going to happen in Texas is going to mean there's going to have to be a lot of movement on the other end of the political continuum for anything to switch.
The other end meaning what?
The other end meaning the left, the Democratic side of it. And, you know, the one thing to keep in mind is that 61% of non-Hispanic whites in Texas identify as Republicans, but that white population, the non-Hispanic white population in Texas, is older. So if you get up to the higher edges, up to people, if you go about 50 years old, non-Hispanic whites in Texas make up about 52% of the state's population, and Hispanics make up only about 31% of the population. The thing that's really interesting is when you get down, say, the 13-year-olds, you're talking about a population that is 47% Hispanic to the population of Texas and only 35% non-Hispanic whites. And when you get down to the bottom, to the youngest age group, 5-year-olds in Texas, 5-year-olds and younger, you're talking about 50% of the population in Texas is Hispanic versus only about 32% that is non-Hispanic and white. So it really is this kind of bubble moving its way through the population of Texas, the Hispanic population. And it's just a question of when that huge bubble hits 18 and can vote, what happens to the vote in Texas?
And when do you think that's going to be?
When you look at these numbers, it really is 18 is something of a big tipping point right now. So you would think that you would start to see changes or movement, really, I think, over the next 10 years. I think you would start to see Texas shift to be much more purple. And then the thing to keep in mind, even these numbers we're talking about, right, they're going to continue. It's not like once you get under 5, all of a sudden the non-Hispanic white population is going to be larger than the Hispanic population. It really is a trend line. They're getting divergent. They're getting further and further apart. And it would appear, I mean, at some point, obviously, it will stop and it will flatten out. But right when you look at the trend line, there's no sign that's going to happen. So, you know, 10 years from now, it could be that gap at 5-year-olds is even bigger. It could be an even bigger edge for Hispanics. And, you know, that could be have a huge impact on what happens, you know, 10 years after that. So 20 years down the line, it's just going to be something we're going to have to watch.
That's just a few presidential voting cycles.
Yeah, the thing to keep in mind is that's why these numbers I talk about, this could happen relatively quickly, just because as this group ages into voting, the movement that everybody has been talking about in Texas could happen relatively quickly. It's one reason why hasn't Texas flipped? Why hasn't Texas flipped? It's like this huge edge that Republicans have with non-Hispanic whites. And the big bump in the Hispanic population, though 38% of the population of Texas is Hispanic, but a huge chunk of that 38% is not able to vote yet. And once they can vote, it could happen very quickly. The shift could happen very quickly. I think the other thing to keep in mind is this. Hispanic turnout in Texas is very low, and there are a bunch of reasons for that. But at some point, if Texas becomes a close state, a real true battleground state, if it starts to look more and more purple, money will flood into that state. When you're talking about money flooding in to help boost turnout, that tends to help minority groups more than whites. It tends to help minority groups like Hispanics, say. So you could have these double factors of like this under 18 population aging into voting age and also a kind of redoubling of efforts to turn out the Hispanic vote. And again, it could lead the changes to happen much more quickly than a lot of people imagine.
The other issue is that, right now that Latino voters, that's a protected class in regards to the Voting Rights Act, but white voters are not. And once Hispanic voters are able to gain a foothold or majority in the state, that they will be able to rejigger voting lines and gerrymander things in ways that favor them, that you're going to see a quick collapse of the voting power, political power of white voters.
Well, that's we've seen that all around the country too. Look, if once a party gets control of a state house, right, things happen really, really fast. Or even when it gets closer, and then the redistricting gets tougher and tougher, because if you're in control, you can redistrict the state the way you want it. In long term, in Texas, two things work against work for Hispanics and really work against Republicans, I would say. And that is, look, the Hispanic population is spreading around Texas too. It marches further and further in the state. So redistricting in such a way, even if you can control redistricting in such a way that gives your candidates a big edge gets tougher and tougher to do. You know, I see this. I look at demographic trends around the country. This is true everywhere. Again, Texas is really going to be a flashpoint for this because it's such an important state. So many electoral votes there. But we're going to watch this happen with what I do with the American Communities Project and here at the Journal. We're going to be watching this happen all over the country for the next 10 years, and it's just going to be a fascinating process to watch.
Dante Cheney is the director of the American Communities Project at American University and a columnist for the Wall Street Journal. He recently wrote in a journal his column, Politics Counts, Why Texas Could Flip Quickly from Red to Blue. Republicans have no intention of letting that color change happen without a fight. And another front on that political battleground is over the woman's vote. This week, a new GOP PAC was launched to target women voters in Texas. Katie Glick wrote about it. She's a reporter for Politico.com.
Well, the organization is called Red State Women. It was founded by several Republican women, as the name might suggest, who want to signal that their party can be competitive with female voters. Of course, their launch comes amid a pretty heated Texas governor's race, where on the Democratic side you have Wendy Davis, who Democrats are hoping will sort of up their numbers among female voters and sort of increase turnout. And as much as Wendy Davis does have a bit of an uphill climb in such a traditionally red state, these Republican women are hoping to kind of be competitive across the board.
How important is the women's vote?
That's a good question. It's a demographic that Republicans are hoping nationally to do better with in this midterm cycle and then looking ahead to 2016. In Texas, again, it's sort of across the board a pretty red state, but actually a deeply red state. But the women who have founded this organization, who, they have very deep ties to the state legislature in Austin, they want to kind of get out in front of this and make sure that women know that the Republican Party isn't just sort of banking on, their history of success in Texas, but they want women to know that there's kind of a message tailored to them in the state. That's kind of part of their goal.
Is this PAC, this women's PAC, trying to stop a hemorrhaging of women voters to the Democrats? Are they trying to lure Democrats over to the Republican side? What are they trying to do?
Well, they acknowledged to me in interviews that that they know that Wendy Davis did really generate a lot of enthusiasm among the Democratic base, and especially among women, both in Texas and nationally, Democratic women, of course. They acknowledge that segment of the electorate is pretty fired up in Texas. So they say that they want to make sure that they're sort of also out there, not letting the Democratic Party have what they describe to me as kind of a monopoly on the women's vote. They kind of want to highlight through sort of a couple different platforms, what it means to be a Republican woman. They want to highlight that that's something that's relatable as well. They want to turn the conversation away from abortion. They stressed to me again in several interviews, that they don't want the party to be viewed as a one-issue party. They want, their candidates to be out there talking about a range of issues. And that's something that you can probably expect to see in some of the videos that they'll be releasing. The first video that they've put out is from Railroad Commissioner Christy Craddock, who, offers a pretty personal take on politics and on family life as she talks more broadly about what it means to be a Republican woman in Texas. And they said that we can expect more videos like that from elected officials and regular voters alike.
Looking at the Republican slate of candidates that we have so far from the primary, so we still have the runoff to go, but don't see any women on that slate of candidates.
Right. Well, and it does look like on the Republican side it's going to be Craddock alone after November in terms of leading Republican women kind of on the statewide in terms of statewide positions, and you know that's something that they want to talk about, and that's sort of part of in terms of why they're highlighting the diverse ways to be a Republican woman. I mean, you know, they certainly have her out there as one of the highest ranking Republican women in the state.
And on the Democratic side, of course, we have Wendy Davis running for the governor, and we have Leticia Vandeput running as lieutenant governor, top two on the ticket for the Democrats. Could that be why they're starting this pack? They see a vulnerability with these two very powerful, charismatic women running for the Democratic side.
Well, again, what they told me is that they know that Wendy Davis, and I'm sure if we talked further, Leticia Vandeput as well, do certainly energize a big segment of the Democratic base. That's a ticket that Republicans, whether it's in Austin or in Washington, are pointing to. They're very excited about, something that Battleground Texas as well is pointing to as. That Democratic group works to register voters in Texas. Their thinking is that they want to have a message out there as well, that the Republican Party is also not only welcoming to women, but, they want to portray the party as championing women, and they want to further portray the party as sort of being more in line with where Texas women are. That's kind of the thrust of their argument, which again, does come, as you noted, we have Wendy Davis and Leticia Vandeput representing is such a high-profile ticket on the Democratic side.
And what issues do they want to bring to the fore with Red State Women's PAC? Do they have some substance behind it?
It's sort of unclear the degree to which they'll be wading into kind of the nitty-gritty of policy debates. At least from the first video that they put out there, they're sort of speaking in more general terms about Texas values and women's values and where they see those two ideals coinciding and overlapping. And that's kind of, the broader message that they're hoping to drive home, that sort of the Republican Party's values are very much in line with Texas women's values.
So they haven't put a stake in the ground or laid claim to some of the issues like equal pay for equal work, which is an issue in Texas, which is something that Wendy Davis has tried to get some traction on. Also on the pro-choice issues, or the women's health funding issues, some things that, Texas has not done very well in regards to the so-called war on women.
Well, what they, and again, they launched this morning, so I guess it sort of remains to be seen the extent to which they will wade into some of these policy fights. But, specifically with regard to your question about women's health, several people involved with the organization told me that they don't want the focus of conversations about the Republican Party in Texas to center on that issue. It's certainly a piece of where the party's at, but they want to emphasize to women that there's a lot more, they argue that the party has to offer.
Katie Glick is a reporter for Politico.com. She recently wrote about the launch of the Red State Women's Political Action Committee that will target women voters in Texas. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org, and you can comment directly on our show website at tpr.org. And that's where we also have past Texas Matters programs that you can listen to, and you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.